No plans this weekend? Hit up Slug Magazine's daily calendar and never have another Friday night in.
Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves.
Hey, I'm Matt.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Mitch.
And we are
The Cold Year.
Genre we call ourselves is bastard jazz, just because it's taking a lot of jazz influences, but it's really not jazz, you know. It, ultimately, if you really look into it, it's not. But we use a lot of influence and theory. And then that's informed by, you know, Mitch's and Josh's kind of backgrounds musically, you know.
Yeah, being trained 4 years in jazz, like doing a lot of theory in school and things like that, learning a lot that way. But I was mostly in metal bands and things like that, so I tying like more aggressive attack and things like that to our kind of our sound, I think, yeah. And being very,
We'd add a lot of heaviness to it. It's a lot heavier than what jazz would be. Mm-hmm. By nature, so it's kind of jazz influences bastardized with a little bit of heavier so it's like rhythm and percussion.
Two-thirds of the band are into more kind of heavier, groovier kind of stuff, and I tend to be the outlier, but even then it's kind of fun to take some of these concepts and these chord progressions, like, see what I can do to make them hit harder, potentially, you know? And sometimes it doesn't work, and sometimes it does, you know? So it's just kind of fun to see what we can do.
Yeah, I think a lot of that plays on our instrumentals, at least, of course, is the jazz side of things, and then when it comes to vocals and lyrics, I think we stand out because we play on a lot of dark themes, but we try not to take them too seriously. Yeah. They're all real experiences via Matt's life, fun-filled life.
My incredible life.
But we've taken a lot of dark themes and put them in very upbeat songs or very unique songs and layouts and formats that kind of make them stand out.
That's something that I really love doing, is having a song that where the music and the lyrics kind of conflict a bit. You know, you have a song that's in like a major key that has a lot of the trappings of like something that would be positive, but then having kind of some darkness kind of underlying that. I really love it when artists can do that. I mean, not all of our songs are like that. We have really sad songs that also have really sad instrumentals, but it's kind of fun to throw in every once in a while just to see what happens, to like write a song that's should be a little more peppy and high energy, but have it be about something that most people don't really consider when they're thinking of peppy and high energy music, you know?
Do you have any example of a song where you feel like that's particularly the case?
Probably Kill Yourself. Like,
it's a pretty straightforward name. Like,
honestly.
Like, it's the most direct attempt.
Yeah, it's really not subtle.
The song's
at
called
all.
Kill Yourself, but it's more satirical in a way.
Well,
that,
like, it's dark humor. It's dark.
You can tell by the sound of the song is pretty happy and peppy and tap your feet and whatever, but then it's about a bunch of ways, thinking about ways to kill yourself.
Yeah, or just ways to just hurt yourself. And, you know, again, it's like I'm trying to lose weight, so I'm eating batteries. Like, that's ridiculous and horrible if you really think about what would happen if you did that. Things like that tend to play into... I feel like The Masses is another good... it's kind of one of the singles. The chord progression itself kind of shifts, and then there's this really dissonant chord at the end that kind of, you know, underlays the lyrics of kind of what the initial, like, fall away from a major religion or community. You know, like, if you fall away from whatever religion you live in, and it's part of your, like, existence and your community and stuff, people tend to fall pretty hard, you know? And so the Mass is ultimately about that, but the chord progression isn't actually all that sad, with the exception of that really dissonant chord that I throw in the end of each phrase, you know? A hint or an underlying theme of kind of some dissonance or discord going on, which I love. That's one of the my favorite things about jazz, is that how they can do that. Well, then you have moments where everything breaks apart and it's just a mess and you're like, what's going on? And then it all comes back together and snaps back into place and it makes you appreciate the song even more. In a way, Pray For Me was kind of a lot of the songs that I wrote, kind of the stories that influenced the songs I was writing on this took place around the time I started to fall away. You know, a couple things happened in my life that just kind of allowed me to take those steps into ultimately, you know, just kind of leaving religion in general. I just don't care for it. And so Pray For Me really deals a lot with that kind of transitionary phase, just various things that just kind of made me realize, like, why, you know, I don't understand this, you know? I don't get it. I don't want to be a part of something like this. So that's kind of what Pray For Me is based on. There are, you know, themes throughout the album of the sense of depression and then ultimately kind of coming to acceptance and then falling and then coming back. Spanish Next is about, like, disillusionment, you know, just being sick of and tired of being taken advantage of. Ammonia is about death and how scary it is to look in the face.
And I like how 33 and a third, when you look at it in the context of the album, is almost like you have your song that about your depression that you're going through, you have a song about what you're upset about, but then you have like something that you take comfort in, like,
yeah,
the vinyl,
exactly,
and whatever,
like
something
the whole
that it helps you cope.
Yeah, so
I'd say a lot of the whole of the album is kind of just a therapeutic, or if not, like,
yeah,
it's just a therapy session with what the trauma you've dealt with. And
yeah,
and then it ties to the a lot of the downs, but then there's also those one or two pieces in the album that really talk about, like,
well,
what helped you get through it.
Yeah, so there's 33 and a third, which is literally a love song, which I don't write love songs, I'm not a huge fan of them, but it's a love song that I wrote towards physical analog media. Music is a therapeutic thing for me because it helps me cope with the bad in my life, you know, like, I have a sad moment happen and I process it for a while and then eventually a song comes out of it, and when that song kind of comes out, I feel better about it. I can talk about it again. I can't, you know, it doesn't trigger me as hard, you know, it doesn't make me feel as horrible when I think about it because I've had my opportunity to put it on paper. That's Pray For Me in a nutshell, honestly. So our first album, Praise the Goat, it was very much kind of a first experience for me and Mitch. Josh wasn't in the band at the time, but Praise the Goat, you know, is... There are stories on Praise the Goat, but Praise the Goat is mostly kind of was how I was finding my footing lyrically as well as kind of vocally. I've always been a guitarist. I don't really like singing very much, but...
I think a lot of it was just finding our sound back then. Praise the Goat started off, there's, I think, 10 tracks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'd say 4 or 5 of those tracks were written before I was even in the band 4 or 5 years ago. Like, this was just stuff that already existed that Matt had. And then a lot of those tracks came to life as we became a band, found kind of like the sounds we liked and what made each of us unique in the band. And then also a transition between different drummers, because we did have... 2 to 3 different drummers throughout writing some of that material. And then when we were in the studio, we had a solid drummer for it, and he helped contribute a lot to the kind of a lot of the factors in the sound, like copper, the copper phone and things like that.
Yeah.
There's a few things that we use, and even our live performance now, and it I think Praise the Goat really is our journey to like find out what kind of music we're going to play.
It was
because there's songs that we love from the album, and there's songs that we just don't like to play anymore because it wasn't, they're just too early for what we're trying to play now.
I feel like we've outgrown them very much. Like, they're still fun songs, you know, to listen to, but ultimately I'm not super interested in playing them live anymore just because it's legitimately like, I mean, Hades, the first track on the album, is older than the band. Like, Hades has been around since before the Cold Year. It's just a song I wrote. And it was the song that kind of influenced my approach to guitar, and that I was using these really interesting, weird kind of chord extensions. I wasn't just playing A minor, B minor, C, or whatever. I was, you know, it's a B minor sixth, which is, you know, a step above a fifth chord, and it's theory nerdery, but that's kind of what got me interested in the idea of like playing kind of classic riffs and chord progression stuff, but then throwing in some different inversions or extensions of the chords that we're normally doing, and that kind of helps to make it a little more unique. I really appreciate it when bands deviate from their album a bit in the live show, you know? Like, obviously, like, we're not going to be able to do everything we do in the recording perfectly because we're not, you know, on that level of, like, being able to just buy all the effects and have them on stage with us and production stuff. But I also really enjoy it when a band has a song that you know from the recording, and then they play it, and you recognize it, and you know what's happening, but then they have moments that are different that kind of bring you back to the whole, like, this is a live, you know, I love improvisation, I love jazz, so, like, kind of that improvisational nature in a lot of it is really fun, and so, like, having moments in songs that aren't in the recordings, I love. Like, a lot of the guitar solos I play, I'll have an initial intro riff, but then everything after that is improvised live, and then we'll have a moment where I come back into the song, you know? That I just love doing stuff like that.
I think the last thing we want to do is, we don't want to sound like, hey, this is the record, and then when we get on stage, it's like someone pressed play on the record.
Yeah.
We don't want to sound like, hey, this is exactly what you heard. We want you to be familiar with all the songs, of course, and then we just want to make them more dynamic, more big, low. I mean, we want to change kind of where the volume sits, and it's dropping it down, or different fills, different ways that we play around between the different parts.
Because I appreciate bands who do that. Yeah. I really do. Like,
I think it's more fun for the listener, too. The people in the crowd, you get it. You hear the song that you like, but it's something new and rich.
Yeah.
And what's cool is, because we do that, the song's never the same live, almost.
Yeah.
Like, you can come to the four shows in a row and hear virtually the same song, but it has a different energy almost every time.
Yeah.
Album release that we did for Pray For Me just last month, or earlier this month, wasn't very long ago, we had local artists come out, and they did a gallery-esque show. So we had four or five different artists that had little booths along the room in the Beehive, and then we had the bands play while they had their stations and selling art. So between the bands tear down, put up, all that stuff, people were walking around looking at art and talking about stuff, and people were buying art, and we kind of made like
Basically, if you bought a piece of art, you got a copy of the album for free, like a download code. So no matter what you bought, whether it was merch from us or a $2 little card or a $20 painting, you got a free copy of the album just because it's synergy, you know, and that, like, kind of like, I love your art and I want you to have this opportunity for people who might not go to a gallery walk to come and see it, and hopefully, you know, someone will buy something and they'll get a mutually beneficial thing where we get them a copy of the album, but then also they get to be introduced to these amazing artists, and then the artists are, you know, networking amongst themselves. We're gonna do more. The plan for our show in December is to do that again at the Gold Blood Collective, just invite a few artists who I'm super into to just come and have some art on display. Because, you know, again, the synergy, you know, I'll help you, you help me, but I want to help you because I really like what you're doing.
Well, and too often you find, like, other bands and other artists competing with each other, trying to, like, crab, pull each other down and
step on
each other, to try and make it and whatever, and so it's nice to have some collaboration and help each other out a little bit.
Yeah.
Stop trying to push each other down.
Yeah, and that's one of the best things about the Salt Lake City music scene that I've seen. Like, since we've been kind of more Salt Lake focused specifically, I felt more loved and, like, appreciated up here than, like, I have in ages. Like, it really feels more people helping each other as opposed to pulling each other down. There's still definitely a world of that. There is some of that going on, but ultimately I feel there's a lot less of that in Salt Lake, which is great, because I've seen the local music scenes in other cities and stuff, and it's oftentimes a little more cutthroat than I personally wouldn't want to deal with some of the cutthroat things I hear about that people tell me about. So, but yeah, like 100%, like, we're all artists. We should all be supporting each other no matter what. And that's why, like, I will never release a Cold Year album that's just a band photo of the three of us. Every single Cold Year album that comes out is going to have a piece of original art on it, you know? And ultimately, I'm going to hand it over to an artist and say, hey, this is these are the themes. This is what the album's kind of about. Do your thing. So you're about to hear 33 and a Third. We chose the song off the album because it's kind of a love song to analog music and recording. The song kind of transitions from pure analog, everything, you know, starts off that way, and then by the end of the song, everything is kind of shifted into the digital space, just because it's about loving just music in general, but ultimately it's about my, you know, passion for collecting physical media.
Thank you.
best place to get in touch with us or find our social media is www.thecoldyear.com. We're going to be heading back into the studio in November to start recording some new music. We have a show on December 14th at the Gold Blood Collective with California Queens and Monster Hands. If you enjoyed this episode of Soundwaves, please rate and review us on iTunes.
Promote Slug at community events all summer long as a member of our marketing team. Head to slugmag.com/opportunities to apply today.